Okay, Dakshinamurti Stotram. Let's start with the first verse. Om Vishwandarpanadrishyamananagari Tulyam Nijantargatam Pashyannatmani Mayaya Bahirivodbhutam Yatha Nidraya Yasakshat Gurute Prabodhasamaye Swatmanamevadvayam Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye Bijasyantarivankaro Jagatidam Pragnirvikalpam Punaha Maya Kalpita Desha Kala Kalana Vaichitri Chitri Kritam Maya Viva Vijimpayatyapi Mahayogi Vayasvaichaya Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Yasyaiva Spuranam Sadatmakam Asatkalpartakam Pasate Sakshat Tattvamasiti Veda Vachasayo Bodhiyatyashritan Yat Sakshat Karanad Pavena Punaravrittir Pavam Ponidau Tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtiye Nana Chidragato Darastita Mahadipa Prabha Paswaram Jnanam Yasya Chichakshiradi Karanadvara Bahispandate Jana Mititameva Pantamanupatye Tatsamastam Jagata Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Deham pranam apindriyanya pichalam buddhin cha shunyam viduhu Shri balanta jadopamastrahamiti pranta prashambadinaha Maya shakti vilasa kalpita mahavya moha samharine Tasmai shri guru murtaye namahidam shri dakshina murtaye Rahu grasta divakarendu sadrishaha maya samachadanat sanmatra karanopasamharanato yobhutsushuttapuman pragaswapsamiti prabodha samayeya pratyabhignayate tasmai shri guru murtaye namahidam shri dakshina murtaye Balyadi shvapi jagrada shishutata sarva swavasta swapi vyavritta swanu vartamanam ityanta spurantam sada swatmanam prakriti karoti bhajatam yo mudraya padraya tasmai shri guru murtaye namahidam shri dakshina murtaye Vishwam, this is it.
Yeah, that's
part of it. Okay. So repeat it to me. Vishwam pashyati karya karanataya.
Vishwam pashyati karya karanataya.
Swaswami sambandhataha.
Swaswami sambandhataha.
Shishyacharyataya tathaiva.
Shishyacharyatayatatayva
Pitrapudradhyatmanapedataha
Pitrapudradhyatmanapedataha
Swapne jagrativa ya esha purusho
Swapne jagrativa ya esha purusho
Maya paribhramitaha
Maya paribhramitaha
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
So let's learn the meaning and then I'll do the Sunday. We'll learn the meaning and then we'll practice chanting it. Okay. Vishwam Pashyati Karya Karanataya Swa Swami Sambandataha Shishya Acharya Taya, so Shishya Acharya Taya, Tata Eva, Pitra, Putra, Adi, Atmana, Vedataha. Swapne, Jagrati, Va, Yaha, Eshaha, Purushaha, Maya, Paribhramitaha. One word, Paribhramitaha. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Namaha Idam Shri Dakshina Murtiye. If you look at the first three lines, those are the first two lines. Pashyati is the verb, so Vishwam Pashyati. He sees the universe. We don't know what the subject is yet, but we'll just put it into the verb. He or she sees Pashyati from Drish Pash. He sees the Vishwam. He sees the universe. So Vishwam is in the accusative singular, so Vishwam Pashyati. Then if you look now, we've got a string of compounds. One, and the first compound, karya karana taya. That, so karya karana ta. Taya is the feminine, right? From ta, the feminine instrumental singular. So we're just going to give you, I'll give you the meaning. He who sees this as being cause and effect. One who looks at the universe is looking from within the universe, he sees the universe in terms of cause and effect, where karya is the effect and karana is the cause. Now, there's another way that in the commentary, this commentary, it's taken also. When he sees the universe, he sees it as the karya karana sangata. This is a technical term. The sangata means the collection, the collection of karya and karana. Here, the karya karana sangata is the name for the jiva, the transmigrating jiva. It means that the karana is the sukshma sharira that is avidya-based, is ignorance-based, the subtle body that's ignorance-based, that will take on physical bodies, which are called the karya. So if I say, sometimes you'll hear Swamiji, when he's teaching, referring to the body-mind-sense-organ complex as the karya karana sangata, where the karana is the cause and the karya is the effect. So the karana is the sukshma sharira with the ahankara, backed by the avidya, which then, based upon the karmas, will be the cause of taking this particular body. So, hey, hi, welcome. You have to find a nice little place. Or the middle there. Yeah, no, that's for you. So.
Right, Kiki? It's always welcome.
We're in verse 8 in Dakshinamurti. So karya karana sangata is a technical term that's often used for the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and the physical body, the transmigrating jiva. But here, so he mentions that in the commentary here, but it's also, and Swamiji spends more time talking about just in terms of cause and effect, because when we're looking inside of this from within the universe, we see that the whole universe is just a series of cause and effect. You know, any given effect has a cause, and that goes back anadi, the beginningless. So he who sees as being, he who sees the universe as, in terms, we would say in terms of cause and effect, we'll get to the, let's just go through the meaning and then I'll put it together for you. Swa swami bandataha. Sambandha means relationship. The relationship, so the taha is that indeclinable ending that really, again, can have the fifth case sense, but it can mean here just, again, in terms of the swami, which means the master or the employer, and swa means and oneself. So it would be like the employer and the employed, swa swami.
Another
what?
Like another...
Oh, you forgot your thing?
Maybe
No, just me.
employer,
like master and servant. That those were the terms they used when this was written. We would say employer, employed, any type of that unequal relationship where somebody has power over you is your employer, or is in your master in a master servant situation.
And where's this found?
It's found in this book.
Okay. I thought the chai was really good.
It's delicious.
Sambandha means relationship.
Relationship or connection. Use this one. And at the break, I'll give you something else. Okay. So they're showing relationships here. So the one who sees the universe, right, in terms of cause and effect, in terms of like master and servant, that type of a relationship, shishya acharya, as in terms of the teacher student relationship, tathaiva means similarly, right, or
the,
and
the taya ending is the feminine instrumental singular.
Yes,
right?
Ta. Taya. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying as, you can say as or in terms of,
okay.
Right? So pitra means father, putra means son, adi. So you bring in father, pitra, putra, son, daughter, you know, husband, wife, mother-in-law, they have a whole list of them here. Mother-in-law, sister, every type of familial relation is what this is kind of. So father, son, adi means etc. With the atman, atmana, just means, it's again instrumental singular from atma. That just means, again, in terms of, as the nature of, having the nature of father, son, mother, daughter, all familial relationships. So now, let's get to this. This is the important word for this. He who sees the universe, bhedataha, as dual, right? As divided. Because looking from within the universe, so when you're looking at the universe, you're going to experience the universe as bheda, as divided, as dual. From the standpoint, so the fifth case, taha, means like from the standpoint of duality, of bheda, of division. So everything I see when I'm looking at the universe, I can see myself as the jiva, as the karyakarana sangata. I can look at the whole universe in terms of cause and effect. Mm-hmm. I can look at the relationship that people have with each other in terms of their work, in terms of their work, employer, employed, or slave and slave or servant and master. Or I can look at the relationships in terms of teacher and student. Or I can look at the universe from my own perspective, you know, as teacher, student, or in a relational way. You know, you are my father or mother or sister, you know, or you are my mother-in-law or father-in-law, whatever relational thing there is, sister or brother. I can look at this universe or experience this universe from that perspective.
So is this like these relationships, and then as having the nature of dual?
It would be like this. Here's, take the basic sentence as this. Vishwam pashyati bhedataha. I experience this universe.
He sees.
One sees this pashya, this vishwam, one sees this universe as dual from the standpoint of duality, bhedataha. How do I see it as dual? I can see myself, this is the dual way of talking about karyakarana sangata. I experience this universe as dual from my own standpoint as a jiva, the karyakarana sangata, or I experience this universe itself in terms of cause and effect. You know, everything creates another. So being within the universe, I can look at all of the cause-effect relationships in the universe. So I can experience this universe in terms of cause and effect. I experience this universe in terms of employment, employer, employed, you know? And so that's in a relationship outside of the familial relationship.
Yeah.
Or I experience this universe as dual in terms of teacher-student. You're the teacher, you know, you're the teacher and I'm the student, or vice versa. Teacher-student relationship. In all cases, I'm a jiva, right, experiencing this universe in a dual way. That's the beta taha. So he's just showing the various relationships. Or I could experience it in terms of my familial relationships, putra, pitra, father, putra, son, etc. Etc. stands for mother, daughter, sister, brother, mother-in-law, father-in-law, all of the relational names that we have. Okay, so here we don't yet have the real subject, so we're just saying pashyati, one experiences, or he or she experiences.
And in bheda taha, the taha again is the same indeclinable ending that's added to bheda.
Yes, it's got that fifth case sense. So one experiences the universe from the standpoint of duality.
But so
as being dual.
They have instrumental endings on the Kari Karana and Shishya Acharya. But
so you would say
the taha endings on the other on Swaswami, right?
Yeah, but that's just for the meter.
Okay, but it's the same idea.
Same idea, but your major word here is dual. I experience this universe as being dual, Vedita, from the standpoint of duality, as Karya Karana,
right,
from the standpoint of Swami,
right.
Same idea,
okay.
Right? And as teacher and student, there's no difference there.
Okay.
And all of these are ways that I experience the universe as dual, and he's just listing a bunch of them. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you've got Karya Karantaya as that ta is that abstract ending, which is a feminine ending in the instrumental singular. Swa means one's own, and Swami means the master. Sambandha, that relationship between myself and my employer, right? So Swa and Swami, from the standpoint, taha, from the Swami Sambandha, from the connection between oneself and one's employer. Then shishyacharyataya, by or as the teacher and student, the state of being ta, the state of being teacher and student. It's that, again, that abstract. And similarly, indeed, tataiva, pitra, putra, adi, atmanaha, you know, as the nature of atmana, as the nature of putra, pitra, putra, etc. Or you can say as the nature of, or you can say as the self-being. Often when atma, the atmana, is in that position in a calm down, it can mean the self as, or it can mean like rupa, or swarupa, one whose nature is. Okay, so that's kind of important to know that. So he experiences this universe from the standpoint of beta, from the standpoint of duality, from a dual perspective, beta taha, as, all these three things. Then Huda, so let's go to the next line. Swapne is in the locative singular, means in dream. Locative singular, swapna is dream, swapne in dream. Jagrati from jagrat, jagrati, locative singular, va, or in the dream state, or in the waking state. So in the dream state, swapne, jagrati, or in the waking state, va means or. Yaha means he who.
Or one who?
Well, take it just for he who for now.
Okay.
It could be one who, it could be he who or one who, but we'll take it as he who for now. Because eshaha purushaha. This eshaha purushaha. This purusha, this being, this conscious being, which is really the paramatma. The purusha really, the purusha means the self. The conscious being is the purusha. So this purusha, this conscious being, who? So yaha, eshaha, purushaha. This purusha, nominative, both nominative singulars, eshaha, purusha, this purushaha, yaha, who? Who sees this universe as dual? Okay, so there's your sentence. Here's the basic sentence. This Eshaha Purushaha Yaha Hu Vishwam Pashyati Bedataha, who sees the universe Bedataha as dual, from the standpoint of duality. Swapne jagriti va. In the dream state and in the waking state, this Purusha, who sees, who pashati, yaha pashati, who sees Vishwam, the Vishwa, the creation, Vedataha as dual. Now look at this next word. Mayam paribramitaha. Taha again is that indeclinable fifth case ending. And here it just means fifth case in the sense of because of. The paribramitaha, the total delusion, maya, the total confusion due to maya. It's a compound. Maya. Pari means when you get pari as a upasarga, as a preposition to a noun or to a verb, it means all the way around. So say if you use it in terms with a word like brahm, which means to be totally, to be confused or deluded. Often we use the word delusion. So paribrahm means to be totally confused because because there's no real option. The Ajnanam is complete. Like if you are in this world as a jiva, you haven't had a prior condition of having knowledge. So you're born into this world as a jiva, and the births are beginningless. Just like the maya is beginningless, they say that the births for the jiva, the transmigrating entity, are beginningless. Because what would be your prior condition? Knowledge? So that that ajnanam is considered natural and beginningless. And so natural to the jiva. And so if you are always contained within duality, and all of your sense organs look outward, which means that all of the means of knowledge that you have are means of knowledge for the experience of this creation, right? So all your sense perception and inference and presumption and all of these, you know, anupalabdhi, not seeing an elephant in the room, all of these different means, pramanas, these means of knowledge that you have available to you are means of knowledge to gain subject-object relationship, to gain knowledge within duality. And so you have no means of knowledge attached to your upadhi, attached to you as a jiva, to give you the knowledge of yourself being free from this universe, and in fact the whole universe coming from you, being sustained by you and going and resolving into you. You have no means of knowledge available to you that is part of the jiva, part of the individual, to recognize I am the whole. It is exactly, the way to really understand this is to just think of your own imagination or a dream. If you're a dream character within the dream, within that dream, the means of knowledge you have available to you, just like we do within this waking state, the means of knowledge are only good for experiencing what is within the dream. There's no means of knowledge attached to you to tell you that this whole dream actually comes from me, you know, is sustained by me, resolves into me, I'm really the self of the whole, and this whole dream has no being apart from me. What means of knowledge as a jiva within the dream do you have for that? Since there isn't one, the Brahma, the confusion or the delusion, is total. It's all around you. Wherever you look, every means of knowledge that you have only substantiates that delusion. Mm. So that's the paribramitaha, brahmitaha, or brahmi, whatever they have. Yeah.
Wow, that's really stuck.
Brahmita, yeah. Paribramitaha. So because of the complete delusion or confusion brought about by maya. So now we have this. This person, Eshaha Purusha, this Purusha, who is really Brahman, right? This Purusha, who due to the delusion caused by maya, so maya-ya, right, feminine, mm-hmm. This delusion brought about by maya, this Purusha, who experiences this universe as dual in the form of all of these relations, right? All these relations that are listed in the first two lines. In the waking, in the dream, or in the waking, you know, he who experiences all of this as dual due to the total delusion of brought about by maya, in the waking and in the dream state and in the waking state. So, to him, Sri Guru Murtiye, who is in the form of my teacher, Namaha idam Dakshinamurtiye. My salutations to the Lord, to Dakshinamurti. Who is the truth of the Purusha, the one who doesn't have that jnana, that ajnana, right? So from the standpoint of the truth of Dakshinamurti, right? Myself, who is now in the form of my guru, Guru Murtiye, who is manifest in the form of my guru, my teacher. That's the Guru Murti. Salutations to him. To the one who, because of the total delusion of Maya, experiences this creation as dual. So to understand that, all of the jivas in this creation, who are nothing but myself, right? There is no jiva here that is not myself. Every jiva is myself, is my being. There is only one Atma. But every jiva, until there's knowledge, experiences this creation as dual because of the incredible power of the delusionary power of Maya, right? Maya brings about that delusion of the delusional situation brought about by Maya. Okay? So because of that, every jiva whose self is nothing but myself experiences this creation as dual in terms of all of these relations. So salutations to the Lord, right, who is now in the form of my guru, means the one who is capable of removing that delusion. That's the idea.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. He says, just so you don't think, oh, my guru who's deluded by Maya. So, in the Bhasha, he makes that clear. So.
Thank God.
But it doesn't say, I mean, does it say here removing?
No, it doesn't. But he says, tetva jnana, tetva jnana nivritti maya, maya vibramaya Sri Guru Murtiye. Salutations, this is in that Bhasha. He says, iti uktartam. This is the meaning of ukta artam. This is the meaning of what's being said. He says, salutations, Sri Guru Murtiye, to the Dakshinamurti, who's in the form of my teacher, who's manifest as my guru, who vibramaya, maya vibramaya, the one who this Vibrahma means total delusion. This the delusion, the Vibrahma. The Vibrahma is the synonym for Pariprāmitaḥ. Who, the Vibrahma of Maya, Nivritti, removes, okay? Is the remover. No, the delusion of Maya, Nivritta, is removed. Tattva-jñāna. So salutations to him by whom the delusion of Maya is removed by knowledge of the truth. It's a bahuvrihi. So just for Sanskrit people especially. Pratyak rupaya, the real nature, the innermost nature of the Purusha, the truth of the Purusha, who is the true form of the Purusha, which is the Atma. So he says, who is that? Tetvak jnana nivritta, that's passive participle, maya vibramaya, the one by whom, because nivritta is a past passive participle, so the one by whom the delusion of maya, nivritta, is removed, right, by tattva-jnana, by knowledge of the truth. Okay.
Is that Shankara's commentary?
No, this is written by Shankara, and the commentary is.
Oh.
There's a commentary and a sub commentary here. One of the commentaries is by Sureshwara.
Oh.
And there's a Tattva Shuddha by Swayam Prakasha. And another one by Ramatirtha. That's the commentary of Swami Jesus. Okay, for everybody?
Can you say that insofar as one takes oneself to be a finite entity, a subject, then insofar as that is the case, insofar as you take yourself to be that, then there is a sort of finite set of causes and a creator for that subject.
What do you mean, creator?
Like a creator, God, you know, an end to a causal chain for the finite entity. So insofar as you take yourself to be a subject in opposition to the universe,
yeah,
that universe has a necessarily finite set of causes and a creator. But it is only through self-knowledge that you realize that to be. You realize the causal chain to be endless or empty or whatever. Do you understand that? can you say in some sense that when you are taking yourself to be a subject or an object, but a subject,
yeah,
from that vantage point, there is a finite set of causes, like, you know.
Yeah, but it's beginningless.
Yeah.
Yeah. A beginningless set of cause and effect, and endless as long as the creation is, as long as you're within the creation.
So there's no sense in which you can talk about Ishvara as being a creator God from no sort of perspective, from no vantage point.
No, you would say, like, say for somebody who's just a samsari and a jnani within the creation, there's always, at least kind of within, we're talking about like within the Hindu or the Vedic vision, there is the jagat, this creation, and the whole Vedas will support this, you know, the whole kind of scriptural, all the scriptural texts. There is this creation, there is the jiva, and there is Ishvara. And Ishvara is looked upon as the Lord, the one who's, you know, omnipresent, omnipotent, you know, transcendent, and immanent, all of these things, all-powerful, sarva-shaktiman, all of these things. But there's not necessarily any thought in the Vedas that Ishvara had a beginning. But then they won't also kind of recognize that Ishvara will always be Ishvara. They don't think of Ishvara ever himself having been created. Just so even in all the religions that have a God, you don't think of that God as having been created. So that God always was. And they can also know in kind of a almost layperson's way that the creation is viewed as cyclical, because it is viewed as cyclical. But exactly what all of that means, the depth of what all of that means, is not clear. But there will always be, within the creation, there's the jiva, the individual, there's this creation, and there's Ishvara, the Lord. And the Lord is the one who created the creation and the individual. Mm-hmm. But the depth of what that all means isn't known.
What happens when it goes into unmanifest? Is all that...
Well, say if you ask that question, then you have to come up with that answer. Like, say somebody says, gee, if the creation is cyclical, mm-hmm, and what happens to Ishvara when the creation goes into unmanifest condition? Mm-hmm. That becomes a question, and then you could say, well, Ishvara goes to sleep at that time. And that's actually how it's answered. Mm-hmm. Ishvara is going to sleep, and when the creation, say in the pralaya, when the whole creation goes into unmanifest condition, then just like when you go to bed at night, your experience goes into unmanifest condition.
Yeah.
At the same time, Ishvara's experience goes into unmanifest condition. And then when the creation comes forward again, then that is what we call the Satva Yuga, the first yuga of the four time periods. And in that yuga, it's like 4 in the morning, which is the freshest period. That's considered like the most sattvic period of the day, the time when a scholar should always get up at 4 in the morning. A sannyasi, a sadhu, should get up at 4 in the morning, because that is when the mind is the most clean, the most fresh, the most awake. So the very first portion of the day is looked at as sattva yuga, and as the day goes on, things get tired. and then in the end, you know, in the last period, Kali Yuga, everybody's totally worn out and it's dark and you can't see well and everything becomes confused. So this is kind of how, within the kind of the mythology, they visualize this. It's like making a story or an anthropomorphizing Ishvara, you know? And so there's all kinds of like kind of prayers and shlokas and things like that are describing this. But all of them are kind of an anthropomorphized description of how we actually do view the creation. So it's not, it's coming from the underlying truth of, and there's an underlying truth to that type of imagery, right? But once you start gaining knowledge or seeing what the Upanishads have to say about what a person normally is just experiencing within duality, because most people are experiencing the Lord subject-object relationship, like the Lord is different from me, and the Lord is the creator of the creation and the one who looks after me. They're experiencing the world from the duality. But then once you start to say, once you become a seeker and you want to know what is the truth of all of this, then Ishvara is actually a beginningless manifestation. Ishvara really is Brahman. And what we mean by Ishvara is the conscious being, which is Brahman, which from beginningless time, and consciousness has no beginning, but which from beginningless time, you know, because of Maya, manifests as the creation, which is very similar to, for you to be able to understand what that would be like, is to think, what is it like for you, just consciousness, having a dream or having a lucid dream? Or if you have the capacity to imagine anything, actually. You know, so consciousness with that capacity for creation, mm-hmm. and Maya, with that Maya capacity, on a total level, is what we call Ishvara. If you want, what is the truth? Who is Ishvara really? Well, Ishvara, and this creation really, it is Brahman. It is a conscious being. Right? So Ishvara is Brahman with this Maya capacity that is natural to Brahman.
In what sense is Ishvara transcendent?
Ishvara is transcendent because consciousness is transcendent.
But that's Brahman that's transcendent.
But Ishvara is Brahman.
So insofar as it's Brahman, it's transcendent. That's the way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Transcendent and eminent. And even in the end, these words don't apply, but they're useful in kind of the teaching. They don't really apply because there is really nothing there except for Brahman. Like, say, for instance, if you use the good old clay pot, do you say that the clay transcends the pot? Well, really, I'd say, well, it does transcend the pot in the sense that if the pot is replaced, transformed into a plate, you know, the clay remains clay. And so the clay isn't subject to becoming something. The pot, the pot changes into the plate, changes into the tumbler, goes back into a mass. So in that case, and when you say that, okay, clay is transcending these names, is immanent and transcendent. But from another level, these terms don't apply when you understand that what is the Maya, the mitya, that is dependent upon, which is dependent upon the clay, that Maya has no being at all to differentiate itself in any real way from the clay. That's the Advaita. There's really nothing there but clay. Like that, there's really nothing here for, except Brahman. So if that's the case, where is there any immanence and transcendence? Mm-hmm. But these terms are meaningful when we're viewing it from the standpoint of Maya.
Yeah, but in the same way, then can't I say, or any object say, that it's transcendent in the same way? Because if you're saying it's transcendent insofar as it's Brahman, then everything is equally as transcendent.
Equally transcendent, equally immanent, equally transcendent.
So why then do you apply the term transcendent to Ishvara and not the Jiva?
You can do the same with the Jiva, because Atma is immanent and transcendent, and the Atma is Brahman.
But why is it customary to talk about Ishvara as transcendent as opposed to the Jiva? Because there is no difference.
It isn't. It shouldn't be, in fact. In fact, okay. When you say Tattvamasi, you are that.
Yeah.
In the end, you have to see both as immanent and transcendent. If you use these words, we don't really even use these words.
Yeah.
You know?
English words.
They're English words. They're very Christian words when we're talking about God is immanent and transcendent, you know, kind of a Christian theology and Christian argumentation. We can bring those words in here, you know, because they can apply, but then you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder sometimes, you know, like in longer meditation retreats, I really have the experience of, you know, like just resting in consciousness and what that feels. And then somehow I'm still struggling with, like, you know, should I use words like God or not? Because in a certain way, it doesn't make sense. And I mean, I know it makes sense from the point of when you're caught up in Maya. But then also knowing that
that God is just a construct in that way.
But God isn't just a construct. That's not right either. So let me talk about that. Just like here, this is Maya, and here we are all jivas in Maya. In fact, yourself is myself. Yourself is myself. There's not two selves. Okay. So then, why should we talk about any relationship that we're having? Why should we bother? But in fact, it's this, in spite of you being me, there is this relationship from the standpoint of Maya, right, mm-hmm. within here. Now, who's seeking knowledge? Atma's not seeking knowledge. Atma isn't saying, am I Brahman or am I the jiva?
So there's no urge like that?
No, there's no duality from the standpoint of consciousness. There's no question. The one who has the question is the jiva within. Okay, so now you and I have a relationship. All of us, we're interrelated, and you can extend that way out to all of your relationships, whatever your place is in this Maya. You're totally interrelated with this creation. So what are the rules? What causes sukha? What brings about, shanti in terms of this interrelationship? And what brings about dukkha, sorrow? There's sukha and dukkha. So a person wants self-knowledge because they're suffering. You know, like if you're in Sorga Loka, and you're getting everything you want all of the time, I say, well, tell me what is going on, really. But I don't really need to know because I'm fine. You know what I mean? But because of some scars, you can still, in fact, and that's tongue-in-cheek, because actually you can have some scars when you go to Swarga Loka. It's got kind of diluted, but you can have a desire that I want to gain knowledge from Brahmaji. I want to go to the highest heaven. I'm going to work to get there so that I can gain knowledge, self-knowledge from Brahmaji, like a god image. So you can have that type of a desire. And in the highest loka, you can get knowledge from the whole Hindu understanding. Okay, but so that's a little aside. But now, just like within this creation, myself is yourself and we still have a relationship. Similarly, within this creation, this jiva has a relationship with Ishwara. Ishwara is the same me, but the upadi, the conditioning adjunct, the upadi, the maya, is the total. So it's like if you have an imagination, you are the whole imagination, not part of it. But your consciousness and your being and your sense of what they call the abhimana, the sense of identity, not in an ignorant way, but just in an experiential way. If you have a dream of a meadow, an imagination of a meadow, your abhimana, your sense of self, pervades the entire meadow. You see what I mean? Whereas if you're a jiva within the meadow, your sense of self, experientially, from the standpoint of the Maya, only pervades the limited jiva. So Ishwara, from the standpoint of the Maya Upadi, is the one whose sense of self naturally pervades, the Atma naturally pervades, the whole Upadi, the whole conditioning adjunct. And the jiva, within that whole, there are, how many jivas? Countless jivas. Now, the jiva is really part and parcel of that whole. The whole is infinite knowledge. Like Swamiji uses an infinite manifestation of knowledge, where for you, any vritti, any thought modification is limited. It's not, but Ishwara doesn't have a limited experience, as the jiva does from the standpoint of the mind. Jiva has limited experience. Ishwara is the total, and the abhimana, the identification, is with the whole. So now here you are within the whole. In reality, the self, yourself, is, there's only one self. Yourself is the self of Ishwara. So you are Ishwara in reality. But from the standpoint of the jiva, you are in relationship to the whole. You are a part to the whole. The whole is infinite knowledge. You are limited knowledge from the standpoint of the upadi. And so, can't there be a relationship to the whole? The relationship of you with limited knowledge to Ishwara with total knowledge. That's as real as this relationship. in the truth, there's only one self. But the jiva is the one who has to negotiate this world. Is it better to know that this body, mind, sense organs, this limited upadi is part and parcel of infinite knowledge, the infinite upadi, both of which are equally you? And so that allows, that understanding allows the jiva to surrender to Ishwara. The surrender is not a physical act, right? It's the recognition that I am part and parcel of the infinite expression of my being. That this Ishwara is not something separate or away from me, something hostile or other than me, just like this physical body is not something separate and away from all of the cells in the body, all of the organs of the body. They are all part of the whole. And so I am more than in relationship to the whole, I am being held by the whole as being part and parcel of it and part and parcel of the laws. And so then that's why they go into all of this information, like the prarabdha karma, the karmas that cause you to take this body, that take you all the way through the life, so that you can have a more trusting relationship with the whole. You see what I mean? But from another level, you are the whole. From another level, you are only Brahman. And all of this is just Maya. But say if you as a jiva try to dismiss all of this as Maya, you have to dismiss yourself as Maya also. And if you do that, that's fine, but you're still having to function in this world. And so the jiva jagat Ishwara relationship and its resolution into one Atma is necessary, because it's not Atma that's gaining knowledge, it's the jiva. And so the knowledge has to be total.
But for a jiva who has gained knowledge already, for someone who has, for a jnani, what is then the relationship? I've never understood that. What is this relationship between their ego, between their jiva, jivatvam, and Ishvara? You know, it's... And where does the bhakti come from?
Well, you know that beautiful verse that we've taught, that single verse that we're just all in one verse, is just about that relationship where it's like a prayer to Bhagavan. And it says, from the standpoint of this creation, I am your servant. From the standpoint of the mind, I am your bhakta. From the standpoint of the self, I am you. You know? Because from all of these different standpoints, there's different... there's a different level of reality. From the standpoint of the Maya, the physical manifestation, then you are part and parcel of Ishwara. From standpoint of you as a conscious mind, then what is your relationship to this whole infinite intelligence that we call Ishwara? I am your bhakta. From the standpoint of myself, I am you. Does that make sense?
But
I think this is a problem that students get into, because you can say, and I've heard students say this, well, and they ask Swamiji often, why do I really have to believe in Ishwara? You know, that's not exactly what you're asking, but do I have to believe in Ishwara, or where is there room? That's one question. Or where is there room for any devotion, or any, devotion to the Lord? Where is there any room for that? You know, I want to be a devotee. I can't be a devotee if I am the Lord. See what I mean? But actually, the one who's asking that question is not the Lord. The one who's asking the question is part of the Lord.
Say that again.
The one who's asking the question is not the Lord. The jiva, body, mind, sense organs, is part of Ishwara, is naturally in relationship to Ishwara. And you can worship Ishwara in any form. Many people enjoy worshiping Ishwara as the whole, and there's a conscious relationship, subject-object relationship between me and the whole, like walking through yourself. Or you love Ishwara, to evoke Ishwara in a certain form, like as Krishna or Shiva or Rudra.
Dakshinamurti.
But then that Dakshinamurti is a manifestation, like an avatar or like a form of Ishwara. It's not, if you're worshipping like Ishwara as Krishna and you have knowledge, you're worshipping Ishwara in that form, because it's more relational to you. It's not that all of a sudden there's no Ishwara except for this little anthropomorphized form, Krishna. You realize Ishwara in the form of Krishna. You see the difference? You know what you're doing. It's not that Krishna, that Ishwara has disappeared. It's just Ishwara is in that form of Krishna. Krishna is Ishwara. Mm-hmm. Krishna is Ishwara. The form of Krishna is Ishwara. But Ishwara is the whole. You have to know that.
But worship is one form of mental activity. And for a jnani to... So can a jnani just say, well, this is the mental activity I enjoy. I have full knowledge of what is. Mm-hmm. But this is the activity I enjoy. So I will indulge in this mental activity of worship, knowing everything.
You can say it in... You're saying it in kind of a derogatory way.
You said,
I will indulge in this activity.
Or not indulge. I guess enjoy.
Participate.
Yeah.
What? But why? Because the universe is so amazing. Ishwara is so amazing. That's why Shankara has written. Who's a? There's no more jnani than Shankara. But he has written so many, you know, so many shlokas and so many stotras in praise of Ishwara or in praise of a. Saraswati, there's just so many of them. I have all of his volumes, in fact. Do you think that he thinks that all of a sudden he's become a jiva, really, and Ishwara has become somebody separate? You know, but even though, like we can enjoy our relationship, you know, and be so grateful for it, which we are, our significant relationships and the people that are dear to us, we enjoy them fully. And are grateful, and there be something beautiful and wonderful. But does our being able to have those feelings and that care and all of that make us an ajnani? Does it make us an ajnani? I would say absolutely not. In fact, the more knowledge you have, the more nishtha you have, the more freedom you have to have those feelings, because those feelings don't take away from or threaten your being. And so the most relational person really is a jnani, because there's no fear that you're going to lose yourself by your attachment to another person and your requirement of that other person to be in a particular way. And it's the same even with your relationship to Ishwara, relationship to the whole. It's kind of a, well, you know best. How can I, from this limited standpoint, say that my position is more clear than yours? And so there's a kind of a bhakti relationship there, because it's your infinite knowledge in the form of Ishwara from the stand versus your limited knowledge. And so to me, the infinite knowledge trumps. So I'm more interested in how the creation unfolds and how can I be in it in a way that is harmonious with what is.
Oh, I see.
Rather than my trying to... And to be able to serve and help in the situation I find myself in, you know, not that I'm always doing that, but I'm just saying ideally, you know.
Yeah.
I try to be in the situation, you know, in a way that is true to the situation and that I can be helpful and be in it with the right attitude. So if I'm not doing that, then for me that becomes my sadhana. Mm. You know, because I'm trying to trump Ishwara, where in fact... You know, it's kind of like graham crackers. I want the horse instead of the cow. You know, when it's really, I do want a horse, but... But, you know, they're both graham crackers. So, like, I want this situation instead of this situation. And they're both graham crackers. They're both the same Atma. They're the same self. And so then, you know, you find yourself in this situation because of your prarabdha and so many other... You know, things coming into play there, other than just your particular desire.
Do you nourish that trust, or is it just kind of?
I nourish that trust whenever it's not there, because if it's not there, then that is something for me to reflect on. Because otherwise, what am I going to nourish? My own ego, my own feeling. I know best, and this is the way it should be. And if you're not going along with me, Bhagawan, then I feel really. Ripped off by you. or whatever your anger expresses, you know. Why did you do this to me?
Yeah.
It could be, why did you do this to me? I've worshipped you all of these years. I've been your great devotee.
And I get this.
You know, they even have stories about this, mm-hmm. where some guy is just furious at Bhagavan. Why did you do this to me? Everything you do is you're just making a mess out of it. Some of you will go on and on about this. You're just making a mess of you. Spoiled my life. Spoiled everything. I've been so devoted to you. How could you? What kind of person are you? So
okay, goes on.
You know? And then Bhagavan says, this is my greatest devotee. He is always only thinking about me. He is never not thinking about me. Dhammaji does that so well. Okay, let's take a break.